Thank you, Dora. And our final paper is going to be from Anna Antich. Anna is also a lecturer at the University of Exeter, a lecturer of international history, and is also a member of the Reluctant Internationalists team here at Birkbeck. And her new book, Therapeutic Fascism, Experiencing the Violence of the Nazi New Order, is going to be released by Oxford University Press in a matter of days and will be available as an open access publication in a few months as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm calling this Imagining Africa in Eastern Europe. It's very much a working title. And so this is, as in Dora's case, this is a very, very new project. I'm feeling a very shaky ground here. But that's why I have a presentation to make up for the shortcomings of my talk. So this is going to be a talk about links between Eastern Europe, socialist Eastern Europe, and the sort of the decolonizing world. My new project, I'm looking at this alternative socialist internationalism through the prism of psychiatry and mental health. And in this paper, I'm zooming in on this one case study, one particular psychiatrist. So it happened, or a group of psychiatric researchers, and as it happened, the most high-profile and the largest psychiatric technical aid mission from Eastern Europe to Africa happened to come from Yugoslavia and go to Guinea. And so in the paper, I'm actually zooming in on this particular researcher and his involvement in the Third World. But so this comes in the context, obviously, of socialist internationalism. So in the map, we're actually kind of aiming for Moscow. I think in the context of socialist internationalism and Soviet-led internationalism, I think it's important in this project in particular to focus on that the very important, very significant role that this rhetoric of anti-colonialism played in this sort of Soviet self-representation in the international context, and that sort of fierce critique of global racism. And in the 1960s and 1970s, which is sort of my timeline at the moment, both the Soviet Union and various East European states are very active participants in various kind of international UN hosted discussions about race and racism and anti-colonialism. And so that in this sense, in this context, and I see this socialist internationalism as an alternative to the West European, the sort of this dying, agonizingly dying West European colonial project in Africa and Asia. It's an attempt to link peripheries, sort of former peripheries, former outsiders, and to kind of try to export this alternative models of development and modernity, kind of showing the West or kind of linking, learning, exchanging knowledge through the peripheries and avoiding the core. But that is a bit problematic, as we'll see in a moment. And so my case study is Yugoslavia for a number of, I think, obvious reasons, because just because of this particular role or a specific geopolitical position that it holds, and it's sort of after 1948, it's particularly I think, uniquely well positioned to maintain links, political, cultural, medical, scientific links with both East and West, as it sort of becomes kind of steps outside of the sort of control of the Soviet bloc, but remains a communist socialist country, and so develops these links with Western Europe, in a particular psychiatric and medical networks sort of flourish between Yugoslavia and France and Britain and even the US, and these particular psychoanalytic and psychiatric connections are particularly important. And as I said, sort of Yugoslav psychiatrists are very interested in French and British schools of psychoanalysis, but they also become interested in, just because I think they interact so much with various French psychiatrists and psychoanalysts, they become very interested in this idea of transcultural psychiatry and ethno-psychiatry, which is very much, whose homeland is very much France, and then sort of spreads to Montreal, so Canada, and the former French colonies, but it's very much a network driven by white French psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, anthropologists, ethnologists, ethnographers, and so I think in order to look at this sort of socialist globalization and socialist internationalism, I think it is particularly interesting and perhaps instructive to look at Yugoslavia, because it's sort of, and after Stalin's death, in addition to having its sort of strong links with Western Europe, it develops, it's kind of reinforces its links with the Soviet bloc, with the Eastern bloc. So it's not, in fact, a complete outsider even within the Eastern sphere, but it's very well connected, and especially the psychiatric community, for a number of reasons, particularly well connected with the Western networks, and through those Western networks with the Global South, and because transcultural psychiatry is very much part of the colonial and post-colonial. Yeah, we're going to France now. So this is really, I think, what's interesting. And when you think about socialist internationalism and alternative internationalism, so exchanging models of knowledge and models of modernity between the peripheries, between the outsiders, you can't really study it without taking into account this kind of Western connection, or the kind of collaboration with sort of Western networks of knowledge, because in this particular case, the socialist Yugoslav interest in transcultural psychiatry is directly linked to that connection with Western Europe, with their sort of being linked with and sort of embedded in the French transcultural psychiatric and ethno-psychiatric networks. And it is through these networks, actually, that the socialist psychiatrists then sort of start thinking about the Global South, about Africa, so traveling to Africa, and thinking about kind of exporting models of socialist revolution and socialism to the Third World. So it's a complicated triangle that they work in, sort of being very much of socialist background, but then kind of westernized and studying and training in France, Britain, or New York, and then sort of traveling as socialist psychiatrists, but still Western researchers, but socialist, not entirely a traditional Western white researcher, but a kind of non-aligned socialist Marxist psychiatrist trained in France, traveling to various places in Africa and Asia. One thing about transcultural psychiatry, is because you know, people might not be familiar, as one of the researchers, one of the historians said, it is one of the multiple sets of practices in which colonial psychiatry transformed itself during the decolonization period in the mid 20th century, and it's sort of an attempt of you know, colonial psychiatrists and mainly French psychiatrists, to try to come up with more productive ways, or sort of more egalitarian and humanitarian ways of engaging with non-Western health or mental health psychiatric strategies and concepts. And it is, you know, as many historians say, transcultural psychiatry really kind of sets up, you know, just the very fact of its professionalization at this moment actually signifies a kind of a radical transition. It is a period of transition, of crisis, of reconsideration of the colonial project. But for transcultural psychiatry, especially at this time, the 50s and 60s, it is very it's very difficult to actually shed its colonial past. So I do think that in transcultural psychiatry and then ethno-psychiatry, which sort of we start speaking of it in the 70s and 80s, the colonial effects, the colonial afterlives are very alive, especially in the way they conceptualize race and culture, the way in this sort of primitivism, civilization binary that they still uphold well into the 60s and 70s. And this is one of the quotes, one of the sort of, I thought, some of the most articulate criticism of transcultural psychiatry, is that it's this reification, exoticization of other cultures, of African and Asian cultures, and the sort of setting up the white researcher as the standard of normality, and also as objective and acultural. And very much, I mean, when we think about Western psychiatrists going to Africa and Asia to do anthropological and clinical research, this obviously has a long kind of anthropological tradition, but also a long tradition in psychoanalysis. And psychoanalysis in the mid-20th century very much affects the development of transcultural psychiatry. But psychoanalytic engagements with colonial territories, with non-European territories, are also very much marked by colonial discourses, by racist discourses, by assuming kind of the universal unconscious, which is very much white and male and European. So In this context, as we come back to Yugoslavia, when you have a Marxist psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, someone who is coming from this background, it's a very complicated geopolitical situation in Yugoslavia, but then educated in France, very much sort of does his training with Serge Lebovici in Paris, and very much sort of becomes plugged in these broader ethno-psychiatric networks between France and Senegal and Montreal, actually. How does that work out in practice? This is what interests me. How is that transcultural psychiatry when it's coming from the East and not from the formerly colonizing West? How does that affect their engagement with Africa? How does that affect their engagement with these ideas of morality and mental health and illness? And they very much think about primitivism and underdevelopment and modernity, and this is very much their language, even if they are Marxist psychiatrists and psychoanalysts. But I was really interested in what actually is the twist and how does it work. And for themselves, they think of themselves as very much, as I said, uniquely well positioned to come up with universally applicable, much better suited theories of how that interplay between cultural factors, cultural, sociocultural context and mental illness. And for them, this project, because they have links with both East and West, but that through the non-aligned movement, they actually feel particularly close to this kind of revolutionizing, decolonizing South and the Third World. And for them, they are actually, as I said, sort of resolving the epistemological impasse of both biological psychiatry, which completely ignores the influence of any kind of sociocultural factors, and this Freudian psychoanalysis and transcultural psychiatry as it's emerging in the decolonizing West, because for Freudian psychoanalysis, the colonial and the racist and this kind of universalist languages is particularly important. This is this sort of this Marxist psychiatry styling itself as a kind of an outsider that is going to completely change and revolutionize the field. And I'm looking at this particular person and his research team, Vladimir Kovlevich, who traveled in the early 60s, spent 3 years in French Guinea, in Conakry, doing clinical work, doing anthropological and ethnographic explorations, and imagining or designing for himself this sort of massive transcultural project of sort of figuring out the exact relationships, kind of universally applicable relationships between mental illness and various cultural factors, and sort of figuring out whether particular cultures have specific forms of mental illness, whether some mental illnesses are absent from other cultures, etc. So it's a very massive, very ambitious project. And then off we go to Guinea. Now, the thing with Guinea is that, I mean, it is a unique... I'm very scared of Jessica now that I'm going to say something stupid. But it's very unique because in 1958, it is the only country... And it's the only territory, the only one of the French territories, and that actually opts for full independence in 1958. It's the first one. And it actually very much sort of openly espouses its project of kind of socialist revolution, its bid for socialism, aligns itself with the first Soviet version and then Chinese version of socialism, and it embarks on this very, very ambitious and very disruptive campaign of modernization, urbanization, industrialization, but also kind of various aspects of socialist policies and socialist revolution become implemented. And it's considered a failed democratization, this kind of a failed, kind of a squandered potential for democratic decolonization, because it becomes increasingly authoritarian. But what I think attracts lots of East European researchers to Africa, and in particular to Guinea, is that this kind of becomes an experimental site for these revolutionary policies. This is kind of a laboratory of various kind of revolutionary. Very, very disruptive, very transformative policies and sort of radical measures, and for transcultural psychiatrists in particular, this is heaven. But what is interesting is that Eastern Europe at this very time is undergoing a very similar project of moving from primitivism and backwardness, as they call it, to some kind of modernity. So there are various complicated links. And what is interesting about Guinea is that in addition to the sort of traditional kind of forms of modernization, urbanization, etc., it does actually embark on these various demystification campaigns, this fight against what they call sort of the traditional religious beliefs of various populations. In Guinea, as one historian called it, unmasking the state, because they were destroying the masks, the traditional ritualistic masks, etc. So this is a very, very kind of revolutionary, very disruptive area, and this is the hospital where he works, where this Yugoslav researcher works. And it's interesting, this is what he comes up with. Right? So this is a quote from one of his, well, actually a couple of his articles. So he finds totemistic beliefs, appropriate rituals, all the way to exorcism, extreme patriarchy, open aggression, blood vengeance, buying of women, market submissiveness of women, extremely archaic social structures, exceptional forms of socio-psychological backwardness. You see, he works very much, or they work very much within the concept of primitivism versus civilization, and civilization very clearly resides in France and what Europe, and this is very archaic, very primitive, very backward society. Now, these quotes, you might think, because I led you to think, these quotes refer to Guinea, but they don't. They actually are from his kind of late 50s research in Macedonia. So he has done research in the sort of south of Yugoslavia, this is perhaps one of the most underdeveloped regions in Yugoslavia and the Balkans, where he tried to compare kind of patterns of mental illness in Macedonia with patterns of mental illness in Paris, and then he finds Paris much more neurotic, but also much more civilized. And then he uses exactly the same language to talk about Guinea. So most Guineans' life is still full of magical rituals with an almost universal application of magic for the purpose of attack and defense. One believes that the world constitutes a certain vitalistic unity inhabited by a variety of supernatural and natural creatures. They're also very patriarchal, very much about magic, very much about this sort of, you know, extreme submissiveness of women, very, very much about sort of primitive mentalities, etc. But what is interesting here, and this is the point, this quest for the global actually brings them, and they go on a quest for the global for a number of reasons, but it actually brings them back to the local, very much brings them back to talking about Eastern Europe and about its experiences of socialist revolution, experiences of modernity and modernization, and its own experiences of primitivism, what they call primitivism, right? When they talk about Guinea, when they talk about Africa, they use exactly the same language as they use when they talk about the sort of the primitive, more backward areas of Eastern Europe, and sort of the parallels abound. Parallels are so comparable, and it's very unclear where Yugoslavia stands on this kind of civilizational scale. It could, it's sometimes it's different from France, but it comes from the same kind of social and cultural family, but at the same time, it is so incredibly comparable to Guinea that the language, as you can see, the language becomes almost interchangeable. And so this is really interesting. So we go off, it's across half of the world, and very much still remain concerned with your own local concerns, political concerns and dilemmas and themes. And I think this is really interesting. What this quest for the global, what that kind of transnational connection really does, it makes Marxist researchers or communist psychiatrists very much reflect on the clash, the internal contradiction in Marxism in general, and especially in Marxist psychiatry, this clash between Marxism's own civilizing mission, right? This kind of colonial primitivism versus civilization binary that Marxist societies in Eastern Europe functioned within, right? This clash between their own kind of colonialism towards their own subaltern populations, right? Within Eastern European societies, and their kind of emancipatory, progressive, anti-colonial mission, anti-colonial rhetoric. This is what very much comes to head in his own writing and in his own work. But he does, and that is the final point, I promise, he does that kind of shifting geographical position, cultural position of Yugoslavia. It's, but it's, it, does it belong more clearly to the African psychiatric cultural zone? Does it become, is it part of Europe? It's not really part of the West and does not want to be part of the West, but civilizationally it has similar mental health, mental illness patterns as France, etc. That actually makes him, this Yugoslav group does actually, as I said, remain within the colonial discourse and is very much part of this kind of Western transcultural psychiatric networks, but it does actually make them more sensitive to kind of developmental potentials of Africa and Guinea. It makes them revise this very static concept of the African mind and the savage self, right? That even transcultural psychiatry and mid-20th century psychoanalysis hold this idea that African societies are replicating the childhood stage of human civilization. It's very racist cultural evolutionary scale, right? So the African peoples are it's sort of like the children of the it's kind of embodying the childhood of humanity, right? And they're kind of timeless people run by their own unconscious, right? And he does have a much more dynamic concept of the African mind. He says, a primitive personality who's young and capable enough can successfully integrate in a technically and culturally developed environment, even though that integration might be accompanied by temporary mental disorders, but they can be grown out of, and that's actually kind of reflects the Yugoslav experiences with sort of primitive soldiers and partisan hysteria in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. But he also very much engages with this kind of Western transcultural psychiatrists who do believe that African societies have lower frequency of mental health, mental illness, lower frequency of mental disorders. That's a sign of the lack of civilization. So you should be proud of your high frequency of mental illness, because that means it's civilized. But you know, while say British and French transcultural psychiatrists would say that this is because Africans were incapable of examining their feelings. They don't have distinct personalities. They have a collective mind rather than individual mind. For Yakovlevich, this is very much a factor of a result of very contingent social, political, and cultural circumstances. It's not about the complexity of the mind, because if these Marxist researchers actually kind of damn the developmental potentials of Guineans and Africans, that actually bodes not very well for the kind of East European or Yugoslav socialist transformation. I'll leave the revolutionary personality because there is no time. And so just a sort of final comment. What do we? So sorry. I called it epistemologies of in-betweenness, but I just want to just for a second reflect on that link between peripheries and what original contributions can that kind of focus bring to our study of history of science or history of socialism, socialist internationalism. And these two are both outsiders. Yugoslavia and Guinea. I find them really interesting. They're both outsiders, quite proudly outsiders. Through, in the Yugoslav case, through non-alignment, and in the Guinean case, through this very anti-French orientation, as they call it, anti-Eurocentrism. But they're both, for both of them, the connections to the West, their entanglement with the West, is sort of quite strong. Their relation to the West, to the core, right, is quite ambivalent, and their entanglement in both Yugoslavian and Guinean case are quite important, quite strong. And so this is sort of an open question about this, again, sort of to redefine the term, to think about the meanings of the term of outside and inside, and to think what it means for inscribing Eastern European Marx and psychiatry into the history of global knowledge production. Thank you, sorry about that.